When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I'm James, and this is The Stage Right Side with James Whiteside, where we'll dive deep into the dark world of dance and come up on the bright side. Oh, that's terrible.
Hello, everybody. This is James Whiteside, and you are listening to The Stage Right Side with, yes, me. I am doing a live podcast taping on Instagram Live with Royal Ballet principal dancer Marcelina Sambe. Did I pronounce it correctly?
Absolutely. I'm very proud of you. Sambe.
Sambe. I saw the accent and I was like, I better honor that. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, absolutely.
So I'm really happy you're here with me today during this quarantine madness. The structure of the Stage Right Side has changed a little bit because usually it's done in my dressing room at the Met. Just like in between shows or whenever I can snag somebody. So now I've sort of opened it up to the world of ballet. And I'm really glad because I get to talk to some of my favorite dancers all over the world. And you are one of them.
Thank you so much for inviting me. I mean, it's an honor.
Oh, please. All right.
It's
let's
true.
Get down to brass tacks. I want to know, first and foremost, how old you are, where you're from, and when you started dancing.
Okay, so I'm 25 currently.
Work.
I'm about to turn 26, though, on the 29th of April, so it's very soon.
Well, happy early birthday.
Thank you. And then I'm from Lisbon in Portugal, originally. I started dancing African dance. That was the first connection I had to dance when I was very young, because I came from this African community in Lisbon, and that kind of transformed itself into ballet through like some help of amazing people that saw something in me and said, mm-hmm. like, I should audition perhaps to join a school of dance. And the conservatoire in Lisbon was the most famous school at that time, and still is, I think. I could do the splits, so I think that's why people thought it maybe might be a good thing for me.
Well, why could you do the splits? Were you just naturally able?
Very, very flexible from a very young age. So that kind of was kind of odd that I was doing African dance, but I always finished in a split. And I guess people just thought, oh, if you have natural flexibility, why don't you become a dancer, a proper dancer? And mm-hmm. yeah, I did the audition.
You did the audition for the school in Lisbon?
In Lisbon. It was kind of like very random because I wasn't really aware of anything about ballet at all. So I kind of went to the audition in tracksuits, trainers, and I just thought I was going to show them a bit of my African dance / hip hop moves, you know, Rhythm Nation. and ended up to I arrived there and all the guys were in, like, in leotards and ballet shoes, and I was like, the place looks so sterile and so romantic, and I never really had been in contact with such thing, and I kind of fell in love straight away. I thought, like, well, I'm gonna work it, and I'm gonna like find a way to, you know,
I don't think I've ever heard sterile and what was the other word?
Sterile and romantic.
And romantic in the same sentence. But, you know, there's a first for everything.
Yeah, you know, can you imagine like a very clean space? Everything is kind of like old-fashioned architecture, but everything is very clean and everybody's in leotards, very, very prim, you know.
Yeah, it is romantic. It's glamorous.
It's glamorous. And that was the first time that I really had contact with kind of like the ballet world. And I did the audition and somehow I got in. I think I had the worst mark, but still got in. and well, quickly.
Well, it's not really about that when you begin. It's more about what people can see in you if you have an eagerness, a willingness to learn, and a general facility. Well, clearly you were flexible already, so that's
half
the battle right there.
Yeah.
Okay, so you were how old when you started at the Lisbon School?
So I joined the school when I was around 8 or 9. And from there was such a quick progression. It's crazy. I had such amazing support from all the students,
what
teachers.
What about your family?
My family was kind of a tricky situation because my dad died around the same time that I joined the school. And then my mom had a hard time to take care of us because it was me and my sister. So I kind of just started staying with friends' families. Mm. And I did that for a couple of years, and then I finally found the family that really supported me from a very young age and really supported me to continue my studies in the school. I still call them my family. They are like the people that I go to home. When I go home, when I call home in Portugal, it's their home. Mm. And I mean, they really helped me continue my career.
Are you still in touch with your mother?
Yes. My biological family is still very important, obviously. And especially in times like this, that you don't really know what's going on and everything. Mm. But yeah, I've been very fortunate. And I think joining the school really gave me such an amazing perspective of life, a new life prospect.
May I ask how you lost your father?
He had a long-term disease, and it was kind of like a slow, gradual thing that we kind of saw it coming. So it was painful, but kind of seeing someone in pain for so long, it was good to see him rest finally,
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Gosh, that's very sad. I can't imagine being 9 years old and losing a parent. So
it was tough, but as I say, the school and my colleagues and my friends were such an important thing at the time. So that's what I always tell when people are going through rough times, you really need to have an incredible support system, and that you build every day. You build that support system every day when you're with your friends and everyone.
Absolutely. I mean, this sounds very tropey and trite, but when you find an activity that really speaks to you and speaks to your heart, it provides a support that nothing else can. And with that, the thing that you found, come people who support you as well. So it's all symbiotic and beautiful. And I remember
so nourishing, so nourishing. Yeah.
So parents, if you're listening, put your kids in a dance class and they will thank you for it for the rest of their lives.
I'm so thankful for the person that got me to the school, actually. Forever.
Absolutely. Oh my gosh. Yeah, I have so many guardian angels along the way who just shaped, my journey. All right. Next thing, how did you end up in London?
So
you went to the school, right?
Yeah. So I joined the Portuguese school, and from the beginning, I kind of started being pushed to go and do little festivals, and then graduated to bigger competitions abroad, and I did the YGP, and then I did this and that, and I kind of created a lot of relationship with a lot of people from different schools abroad. So that was the point for me to do all those competitions, and I thank the school so much for taking me around the world and seeing other people and suddenly being aware that, there's America, and there's England, and there is Asia, and all these amazing places that I can dance in and different styles. And I was obsessed with the Russians for so long, because I was Russian trained. So I just always thought that was incredible. So I got to go to Russia as well. And
do you have favorite Russian dancers right now?
Oh, right now.
Or when you were training?
When I was training, I must say I always really loved the girls.
Oh, of course. I mean, for a gay boy, it's the ladies are it.
Oh my God, it's the Zakharova, Alexandrova, even Osipov as well, of course. All these incredible, and of course the older dancers like Alexizova and all these Kopakova. I mean, all of these incredible dancers were always something that I really inspired. And I really did like the girls, I must say. I was also thought that they were incredible.
I was talking last week with Harper Waters, a soloist from Houston Ballet.
I love him.
Yeah, I love him too. He's just joy, pure joy. But we were actually talking about how all of our favorite dancers when we were training were always ballerinas.
Yeah.
It was I didn't understand male dancing until I was pretty much required to do it. Mm. So, of course, like, all the ladies were my favorite, like Julie Kent and Paloma Herrera, oh, yeah. You know, like all those,
of
like,
course.
American superstars.
Golden generation, that generation.
Gelsey, you know.
Oh, gosh, yeah. Still, yeah. I must say, still, I find so much beauty in seeing women dance. And when I get to dance with them, that's when I get the most, it's the most exciting when I get to do this long, beautiful pas de deux, like Romeo and Juliet and everything. Like, that's something that really feeds my soul. So where were we when how I got to the England? Sorry, I always deviate.
No, it's great. It's great. It's interesting. It's all good fodder for
it's all good.
Years.
Yeah. So I then did Prix de Lausanne and Gaylene Stock, which was the director at the time. She offered me a scholarship and I got to come to the school. I did the audition and everything went well. I got the scholarship and then the next year I joined when I was 16.
Yeah, you had a really fast trajectory. You were promoted very quickly, almost yearly, correct?
Yeah, kind of. Two years. Like
wow.
2 and 2 years. But then when I got promoted to First Soloist, that's first year of First Soloist, I was out most of the year. So that was kind of like gutting. And I mean, injury is so part of everything. And until then, I really didn't graduate my body to the adult shape that I was going, that I had to take. For a long time, I was just kind of this young, talented boy, and I just think that the injury really really told me, okay, now it's time for you to organize what you have and really understand your weaknesses and your strengths.
So what was your injury, and what did you assess to be your weakness?
Yeah, so I got a shin fracture.
What is that?
A shin fracture, so shin splits.
Oh, a shin. Okay, yes, I got
shin.
It.
A shin. I broke my shin.
I was like, I don't know her.
Oh, okay. No, a shin fracture, and I was out for like 7 months, which was a long process. And I mean, I learned so much. Obviously, I had time to assess, like, okay, I'm in London. What can I do? What can I see? Mm-hmm. Let me go a bit crazy. That was the first month.
Yeah.
And then when I got back to coaching, I did notice that my hips were too loose, like I wasn't using my glutes enough, my back was a bit weak. So I had a lot of strengthening to do, which I always thought strength was my thing because obviously I'm quite muscular and athletic. So to suddenly understand that, well, I need to work on these things was such a wake-up call that I'm so happy I had.
So when you say that you went a bit wild, can you go into detail a little bit? What were you getting up to?
I'm gonna be honest. Like, I feel like I needed some growing up to do, like to really understand and to really own everything that I am. Like, all the things that I like about myself and the things that I don't like so much. For example, like I had a lot of time to like really connect the drag scene in London and to really like go out more and be a bit silly, be a bit of a teenager. Because when I came to England, I had such a goal in mind. Like, I was like, I'm coming here. I cannot disappoint my parents and my family. They are counting on me to really, you know, be a good student, be a good person, really achieve my dreams. That's why I left home so young. And so at that time, when I got injured, I thought like, okay, I need to live a little now. I need to like really test
boundaries.
What did
you discover? What did you discover about yourself?
I discover you can do both. I discover you can be a full, fulfilled person that really does. You can have the cake and eat it sometimes, you know? You really can, like...
I love that advice.
Yeah. You can really like, have your career, have your goal, organize yourself, get into class, work your ass off, and then you need to blow some steam off. Otherwise, you always become, like, a one-sided person, a one-sided artist, that it never really, it does show on stage, it shows the way you work around the studio. And when I got back from injury, I felt like a complete different change of perspective, the way that people were looking at me, the directors, the choreographers. I had so much more interest and colleagues. I had like some incredible colleagues that really like pushed me out of my comfort zone because I had a lot of self-pride and a lot of like things that I swear not to do, and I was like, why? And you know, you got to experience it all.
So do you feel like when you came back you had a breakout role?
Yeah I did actually after that same year, I think the first thing that I did when I got back was Let's Go in Manon. So that was like something that I was like, whoa. And whilst I was injured, I missed so many debuts, like important debuts. Like I was going to do Giselle Albrecht, and I was going to do Alice in Wonderland, Jack the Knave, and all of these amazing things. And I felt very gutted. Obviously, I wanted to do them. But when I got back, and the first thing I got to do was Lisco with Nella, Marinella, and Ozzy Pova podcasts. Mm. I had such fun, and I thought, like, wow, everything that I've been living up to and, you know, the growing that I feel like I felt has really paid off now, being on stage and being able to portray this larger-than-life nasty guy.
I mean, honestly, if there's a character to do some research for while you're injured, it could be Lesko. You know, he has that drunk solo, and you could practice being drunk, you know.
Absolutely. Very close to home. But as well, the manipulation, the way that he carries himself around and everything. And I felt like a grown-up, because if I had done that when I was 23 with no experience, or like not being that person that I still had to grow to be, I would have not maybe enjoyed it as much.
Amen to that. And, you know, I'm 35 now, and I feel like...
You don't look it.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. I feel like, in a lot of ways, our bodies are so able when we're young. So, you know, obviously, ballet is a very youthful exercise.
Yeah.
But the mind does not yet have the experience to portray these characters, generally.
Absolutely.
And it's such a shame, because by the time you actually have enough life experience to do these characters and these stories justice, you have to retire.
Yeah.
It's ironic.
Yeah, sometimes there's some incredible dancers that from a very young age are getting these amazing roles, and people question them and say, like, why are you giving this to this person? He's so young, just trying to accompany. But actually, some people are born with a gift of, like, really understanding that from a very young age. So that's why I say every time I'm so happy that I went through such a hard time physically. And so then I had to use my brain so much more and really find ways to, and coming back, you know, you don't come back from machine injury and like suddenly start jumping like you did before. And you, I suddenly had to manage. I said, like, okay, I can't jump every day of the week. Mm. I have to really understand how I'm going to shape this, because I don't feel the same. Everything is different. And then it became more of a brain exercise, and it became until now, it's like, I'm enjoying it so much more.
Absolutely. You find a way to not take it for granted when you are unable to do it. All right, let's go back a little bit. You were talking about the ballerinas and how you really just adore watching the women dance. So you are an out and proud gay man, and I want to talk about how you feel as a gay man in these classical story ballets in which you are playing princes and romantic heroes. You're out there with the women, and you said that they inspire you like mid-performance. Their beauty inspires you. Do you replace your, you know, natural romantic feelings with appreciation of their beauty? Do you feel like they go hand in hand?
Absolutely. So I feel like I have such an admiration that sometimes almost transports into like these romantic relationships that I have with my, I have a lot of girlfriends in a company. Like, I'm so lucky to be surrounded by these amazing, beautiful girls. Like, and when I get the chance to play these characters with them, it's a joy, because it's such honest feelings that I have towards them. And that admiration can really be portrayed on stage in a romantic way, but not obviously being gay and like, you know, that's not what I'm into in real life, obviously, but it is, there's such a similarity to loving a man and loving a woman in that aspect. So I almost don't see a gender, and I just see the beauty. And that for me is what really inspires me when I'm doing these roles. I see the grace and the beauty and that romanticism, elegance. It's just all things that I love in life anyways, in design, in architecture, in paintings, you know, so it's all connected in the end.
Falling in love with beauty. I can respect that.
Yeah. And that's so important. I can so see when I'm seeing a performance and I really connect with the lady in that way, when she comes on, like even like in a classic, like Sleeping Beauty, I love when Aurora comes out bursting it. It's just, it is made to make you feel, and I do feel it. So when I'm up there with them, it's the same.
Absolutely. So speaking of being up on stage, how has the coronavirus impacted your work and your daily routine?
Yeah, oh my God, it's been very hard. You know, I get very motivated by my friends, being in class, seeing people being gorgeous and stuff. Like, I'm such a looker. I'm always looking. And not in a creepy way, obviously, but like because I feed myself so much from these incredible dancers. And so to be at home alone, obviously my partner James is not a dancer. He's James as well, by the way.
It's a good name.
It's a good name. He's like closed in his office, like working because he's a lawyer. So I don't have anyone to even perform to. Do you know what I mean? I love performing to someone. I love having an audience. Like, so that has been the hardest thing, not to have an audience and not feel the warmth and be able to hug people and, you know, have a chat. I'm such a chatter, sometimes overly chatty in class. Been
oh my
told
God,
many
me
times.
Too.
Oh,
me
it's,
too.
Bad. It's bad. It's bad. So not to have those chats and everything. And after class, when we do these Zoom classes through online, the online classes, I straight after, I'm like chatting with my friends and having an old video group and stuff. So that has been the hardest thing, not to connect. Another thing as well is like watching what I have to eat and like, you know, making sure that my shape is all right, because I don't know if suddenly in like 2 months or something, everybody's going to be all right and I'm going to have to go on stage this one. Like, you know, so I'm kind of trying to keep some sort of shape, but
Do you watch your diet? Are you, fastidious?
I'm being more cautious now, trying to like not to overdo, because I know I have a sweet tooth. I've been told, and I do love a snack, so I have to be a bit careful not to indulge, because I'm an indulger. I love.
I do love a snack.
I do love a snack.
So. Can we talk about how you're feeling mentally regarding all of this? Because I think we talk about how we can't dance, but we don't actually talk about how it makes us feel.
Yeah.
How are you doing?
A huge, like, loss of identity somehow. Feel a bit like that. Because I am a dancer, you know, I'm a performer. And then suddenly not being able to do so, I do feel like something has been... I've been robbed of my gift to spread joy and, like, really... cause an impression, which I like to do every day. And suddenly being here at home, that has been the hardest thing. But I've been putting like my mind into things that I enjoy doing and I hadn't had the time to do, like painting. I've been doing lots of painting.
Beautiful.
I've been doing lots of like stuff like that. And I've been binging on series as well, which I love to do. I've watched so much. So I'm watching now, the latest thing that I've started watching, which is a guilty pleasure, I must say, it's Elite. I don't know if you've seen it on Netflix.
Mm-mm.
Okay, Elite is like this Spanish school drama, really like grotesque kind of like subjects. Everything's kind of like put on your face and it's very tan-tan-tan-tan.
Uh-huh.
Very dramatic. But then
I have
as
to
well,
say, I started this British series called Sex Education. Have you heard of it?
Oh my gosh.
I'm obsessed.
Obsessed. I finished it. That's done. That's like, I'm dying to watch the third series now.
Yeah.
There's a guy, Schutzi, the guy that plays Eric.
Oh, he's heaven.
I know him. So like we've met a couple of times and he's just like, I'm a huge, huge, huge fan of him. As a person, as an actor, I think he has so much to him. Can't wait to see him do more. And then I've watched as well another series called Unorthodox, which is about Hasidic Jews.
I've heard of it.
Oh, it's unbelievable. The acting, the costume production, the production value, the cinematography, it's incredible. So the depth, the music. I live in North London, which is a very well-known area for Hasidic Jews to be living. So there's a big community. And I've always been so curious to know more. I want to know more. I want to know more. What is it? What is it about it? And the costumes, the hair, the design, it's incredible. You know, when you think of geishas and all of samurai and all these things, you think like, how did that was formed? And to know more about it, I loved it. So that was an incredible series. What else am I watching? Yeah, Better Call Saul, like I love, because it's the same
makers
of that.
Yeah.
Breaking Bad. It's my lad side coming out, you know. I like that. So yeah, I watch everything. I've been watching everything.
That's great.
Yeah.
What was the last piece of art that you saw? Film, music, television, whatever, that surprised you in how much it made you feel? Like it really affected you?
Oh my God. So
Can
I
be
watched...
ballet? Whatever.
I saw this incredible movie called As Happy as Lazarus.
I haven't heard of it.
So this movie was, it's an Italian movie, and it's a portrayal of this, because before Italy was the communist, how do you say?
Regime.
The communism was abolished. Yeah, regime was abolished. Some people, some communities stayed stuck in like these still farms where they were being basically explored and enslaved, not getting paid and working terrible hours doing tobacco growing and stuff like that. So it's about a community like that that is stuck, isolated. No one knows that they exist, only the people that are enslaving them. And they are then discovered, and then it's the story of them trying to fit into the modern world. It's an incredible movie, and Lazaro is this boy, the main part of the movie, and he is just a pond of goodness and amazingness, and everybody overuses him. Like, not overuses, that's not the word. It takes advantage. Sometimes right. I miss the words, and I'm like, hate it.
No, wait, how many languages do you speak?
I speak Portuguese, English, Spanish, and a bit of French.
That is impressive.
Pas bien. I wish I could speak better.
I can say baguette.
Baguette, oui.
pot-au-feu de bœuf. It's a dish.
Ooh, nice. Nice. Bœuf.
Bœuf. Oh, goodness gracious. What was the name of that film again?
As Happy as Lazaro.
As Happy as Lazaro. Yeah. I recommend a film that I saw recently called Portrait of a Lady on Fire.
It's on my list. It's on my list.
For some reason, talk about extreme beauty. I was just watching it. The costumes, the cinematography, the actors were unbelievable. The music, they used music sparingly. So when it came in, it was really affecting. I found myself just like fully crying pretty much the whole time just because it was so beautiful. I really recommend it.
Oh, it's in my list. Me and James were planning on watching that soon. Very exciting.
So tell me about James and how you two met.
Me and James met through friends. So we've kind of like, I kind of knew of him, but then James does go to the opera house quite a lot. He's an opera fan.
Nerd.
He loves Wagner. Oh my God, there's like, I'm talking about Wagner. There's like his statue here. He has a statue of Wagner in our living room.
Oh my God.
yeah, so he likes opera a lot and he's like very into the art. So it was inevitable when I met him. He just inspired me so much. And he's a lawyer. So I think he's a...
What kind of lawyer?
He's a corporate lawyer. So he does like all the contracts, all that very hard stuff. A lot of focusing he needs to do, but he's an artist at heart, and that I think that art part is really what attracted me to him. He's such an artistic soul and so much knowledge, and a fountain of knowledge and excitement, really.
Is he British?
Yeah, British, very British.
Is he older than you?
Yeah, he's older.
Older?
A bit older.
An older gentleman. There's no such thing as too much older.
Yeah. I think James is almost like only 6 years or something like that.
Cool. It's okay. And you've been together how long?
4 years.
4 years. Wow. When's your anniversary?
April 17th. So quite soon.
Oh, cool. Well, happy early anniversary.
And I know this because it's like one of our first texts. I can go back on WhatsApp and see because I wouldn't know. But I went to see it the other day just to make sure I knew what it was.
Put it in your calendar. That's something good to remember.
I know, but I'm horrible with dates and we are so casual about that kind of stuff. How long have you been with your partner? I only know Dan as Milk, which is, yeah. I didn't want to say Dan.
No. You can call him Milk, whatever. We've been together for 12 years.
Wow. That's incredible.
It's a really
long
time.
That's goals.
For a young gay couple, yeah. I feel like that's a long time. And it's hard to say. Like, I don't want to say it's impressive because who cares? But at the same time, I'm really proud of the work we've put in
to stay together and build a life.
Yeah.
It's inspiring. I mean, it's so inspiring to me. It's so inspiring. That's what I always wanted, to have a stability. It's the main focus of my life is stability. I do like the highs and I understand the lows, but to have stability for me is where I'm at my happiest. To have that concrete floor where I know I can and feet right on earth. I really know where I am and, you know, really understand where I stand. So that's very important to me.
And I mean, I don't like to be alone. So if this makes sense.
Yeah, I guess 12 years. I mean, seriously.
Oh, goodness. Okay. This really sucks, what we're dealing with right now. Yeah. I don't know about you, but I feel obsolete overnight. Like, everything that I've worked my whole life for is no longer a viable option. Mm. And considering our careers are so short, this feels like an incredible waste of time.
Yeah.
What are you doing to feel like you're making progress in this time? What are you doing to, like, make sure that when you return to the stage, it feels right?
I'm going to be completely honest with you. I totally understand what you say about, like, the loss of time and everything. When this first happened, I had, like, a little mental breakdown thinking, oh, my God, I was about to do Swan Lake, the debut that I always wanted to do, talking about beauty, talking about, like, being on stage with this incredible girl. And so that was something that really broke my heart. And then I had Prodigal Son. I had these incredible debuts that I was going to do, and it was going to be the exciting part of my season as a principal, really, as the first year as a principal. But, you know, my body was feeling kind of dodgy, kind of like we were working so hard. So I just thought, like, okay, this has been a gift now for me to be able to reset everything, be at home, reset what my body needs to do. So then 2 weeks later, after me struggling and trying to class every day and, like, being really, like, active as if I can, just tell, like, okay, I'm going to take a chill pill and understand what my body needs and listening to it, you know, have a time to really consider what it needs. And I must say, I'm enjoying so much this rest, the mental and the physical rest, because we put so much pressure on ourselves as dancers. We never get rest enough, I think. There's always another rehearsal, there's another show, there's always, like, pressure. So I just think that I don't think in my career I'll ever have a time like this again to really reflect on everything and really understand what my body needs and listen, because the Royal Opera House is an incredible place to work in. I'm, like, one of the luckiest people ever, I think. But it's relentless. We have such a busy schedule, like every other company, really. So to have a moment to then reflect, I just thought, like, yeah, I'm now at the phase that I'm, like, I'm accepting. I've accepted my condition. I've accepted that this is me for the next weeks or months. And I'm just, you know, I've been practicing things as well that I didn't do for a while, like meditation and all these things. So I'm finding things out and going with the flow and trying not to create too much trauma for me, you know?
Absolutely. Leave the drama.
Leave the drama behind and...
Outside, huh?
Outside the door.
Yeah, I really relate to your mini breakdown, because when... I think the first week that I was stuck at home, I didn't really know how to process the information that, you know, I mean, all of our tours were canceled, and we just learned yesterday that our spring season has been canceled. So when this all started unfolding, I didn't have any of this information yet, and that sort of amorphous state of knowledge freaked me out, because I'm 35 and I do feel at this point a time crunch. I see a race
absolutely.
to keep up with my body, which honestly is doing really well considering. And I don't know, I had this anxiety, and it wasn't like sadness. I think it was just good old fashioned fear. This point, you know, is it like the five stages of grief or something?
Yeah,
we've moved on to acceptance, and I feel proactive at this point. I found ways to connect with dance audiences over the internet and like do a little bit of good, like doing classes with suggested donations to various charities have, like, honestly just made me feel good about having nothing to do.
Yeah. Being so proactive. Yeah, you are so generous. Literally every time I'm on Instagram, I'm online, I see you working, doing a bar, teaching class or something. So you've been, like, incredible and inspirational, really.
I mean, I don't really know how it all happened, but I'm really grateful to have a purpose.
Yeah.
Because I don't know, I think I could get really despondent and hopeless really quickly.
Yeah.
Because, like, if there is one thing I love, it is performing. Like, even if it's a bad show, I don't care. I just love
out there
connecting with live theater. It just, nothing else feels like that.
Yeah.
So I'm really ready to get back to the stage, but the stage is not yet ready for us.
Yeah, I know. I wonder what I keep having dreams of, like, that first time that we go back on stage, and I hope it's special. Mm. I hope you all make a huge effort to really make it special and to really make a big deal, because it's a big deal. Like, I need to perform. That's what I'm missing now.
Yeah, I think the first time we have performances, I don't think there's anything that's going to feel like that ever again. Because,
never.
You know, it's the drug we've been missing, that we've been
craving.
We've been forced into rehab,
yeah.
And we're just strapped to our beds.
This is literally a rehab. I'm telling you, I've been rehabbing on so many, like, habits. On, like, you know, when you're, like, so exhausted, like, going back and forth, sometimes you don't even have time to connect with your partner or family or, like, connect with your friends. And suddenly, this is like a rehab. This is like a rehab.
Well, in all honesty, right now I am at my boyfriend's parents' house in Syracuse,
New York. Nice.
So we were quarantined in New York for, I don't know, it was like 3 weeks or something. And then we rented a car and drove to his parents' house. And can I just tell you, like, I have never spent this much time with my boyfriend's parents. And they're so sweet and they're really kind, and they are cooking a lot, which is amazing.
Oh,
but
nice.
This sort of forced, like, decompression is bringing me closer to people that I wouldn't necessarily spend a lot of time with. So I don't know. I think there's a silver lining there.
Yeah, absolutely. We keep going. I keep going. Like, sometimes I don't even have time to even look at the sky. Like, the other day I went out and I was taking pictures, because I do love taking pictures a lot. So that's another thing that I have in my time. The one time that I get to go out, I literally just go and take pictures of the sky. I keep taking pictures of the sky, James. It's crazy. And I just keep looking up and thinking, like, wow, that building is gorgeous. And I'm always like this. I'm going to theater. I'm going to warm up, and I'm going to do that. And to have the time to decompress has been really, like, detoxing, has been incredible. So that's the silver lining, I guess, of this whole thing. And I think, like, it will help humanity in the end.
I think so too. It's just incredibly sad. And I'm so grateful that I haven't been personally that affected. Other than my work, which is temporary, you know? And I just, my heart goes out to all the people who are actually really suffering.
Yeah.
And I think the more people we can inspire to help, the better we're all going to be for
it. In the end, yeah, for sure.
But I think we should wrap this up, because I don't like a long podcast. It's too boring. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, absolutely.
Even though, like, you are freaking awesome. Oh my God. I have adored talking to you, and I hope we get to dance together someday.
Oh my God, please, let's ask Arthur or something, Arthur Peter.
Yes.
I was talking with him the other day, and he was talking to you about the sergeant that he did for you. The sergeant?
The tenant.
The tenant.
Yeah, the sergeant sounds like fierce, though. Sign me up.
Yes, the sergeant. No, he was talking about the tenant and saying how incredible you were, and Cassie as well, when she came to London,
yeah.
We were talking about you and stuff. And then I don't think I've ever had a chance to tell you this, but I do remember when I was quite young, surfing on it, being on internet, searching dancers, because I'm a ballet bun. I'm a bun head, I guess. I'm a bun head. And I stumbled upon a video of you with Boston Ballet, when you were talking about, like, what you do and what you do outside as well, work. And that inspired me so much. I can't tell you. I literally, truthfully, inspired somebody just thinking, like, wow, this proud gay male, a principal dancer in this incredible company. I want to be that person. I want to be that. And I feel like I hope you know how much you have inspired people, like, in that aspect, so much.
Thanks. Really appreciate that.
Seriously, like, a little boy in Portugal, I saw you and I thought you were gorgeous. And secondly, I thought, like, oh, he's the principal and he's the gay male and he's having fun with drag and, you know, having his own dance group and music group is incredible.
Thanks. Really appreciate that. Well, it has been amazing chatting with you. I hope you continue to water those beautiful plants behind you.
I don't have a green finger, I must tell you. This is all like very, very lucky, but they're going to die. Just to let
they can thrive in this time. They have
I'm not
your
good.
Attention.
I know, that's true. I've been watering more and like, you know, making sure that I pluck the dead leaves.
All right. Thank you so much, Marcy. Okay. And make sure to follow Marcy at Marcy Sombe. And if you're in the London area, please, 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 when the company returns to the stage, go see him perform. You will not be disappointed. This man is gorgeous.
Oh, thank you.
And you can listen to The Stage Right Side on Apple's podcasts, you know, app or whatever that is. Just Google James Whiteside podcast and it'll show up. Thank you, thank you, thank you so much for joining us. And until next week.
Bye.
Bye. Mwah.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices. Plus, extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. And up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices. Plus, extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. And up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.